Hi, this week's In Science and Insight program is coming from the Tuesday, August 15, 2023, Richmond Times-Dispatch news article, Endangered Species Act, 50 Years, Fighting to Stop Extinctions. Embattled federal law protecting wildlife may now find itself in peril. By John Flesher with the Associated Press. Biologist Ashley Wilson carefully disentangled a bat from netting above a tree-lined river and examined the wriggling furry mammal in her headlamp's glow. Another big brown, she said. It was a common type, one of many Wilson and colleagues had snagged in the southern Michigan countryside. They were looking for increasingly scarce Indiana and northern long-eared bats, which historically migrated there for birthing season. It's a bad suggestion if we do not catch one, said Alan Curta, an Eastern Michigan University professor who has studied bats for more than 40 years. They didn't that evening. During 16 nights this summer, they netted 177 bats, but just one Indiana and no northern long-eared specimens. Both are designated as imperiled under the Endangered Species Act, the U.S. law intended to keep animal and plant types from dying out. Enacted in 1973, it protects 1,683 domestic species. More than 99% of those listed as endangered, on the verge of extinction, the less severe threatened, have survived. The Endangered Species Act has been very successful, Interior Secretary Deb Haaland said, and I believe very strongly that we're in a better place for it. 50 years after the law took effect, environmental advocates and scientists say it's as essential as ever. Habitat loss, pollution, climate change, and disease are putting an estimated 1 million species worldwide at risk. Yet the law has become so controversial that Congress hasn't updated it since 1992, and some worry it won't last another half century. Conservative administrations and lawmakers have stepped up efforts to weaken it, backed by landowner and industry groups that contend the act stifles property rights and economic growth. Members of Congress try increasingly to overrule government experts on protecting individual species. The act is well-intentioned but entirely outdated, twisted and morphed by radical litigants into a political firefight rather than an important piece of conservation law, said Bruce Westerman, an Arkansas Republican and chairman of the House Committee on Natural Resources, who in July announced a group of GOP lawmakers would propose changes. Environmentalists accuse regulators of slow-walking new listings to appease critics and say Congress provides too little funding to fulfill the Act's mission. The Endangered Species Act is our best tool to address biodiversity loss in the United States, Senate Environment and Public Works Chairman Tom Carper said during a May floor debate over whether the northern long-eared bat should keep its protective status granted in 2022. Despite the Delaware Democrats' plea, the Senate voted to nullify the bat's endangered designation after opponents said disease, not economic development, was primarily responsible for the population decline. That's an ominous sign, said Curta, the Michigan scientist. Its population has dropped 90% in a very short period of time. If that doesn't make you go on the endangered species list, what's going to? Turbulent history. It's nothing short of astounding how attitudes toward the law have changed, largely because few realized at first how far it would reach, said Holly Doremus, a University of California, Berkeley law professor. Attention 50 years ago was riveted on iconic animals like the American alligator, Florida panther, and California condor. Some had been pushed to the brink by habitat destruction or pollutants such as the pesticide DDT. people over-harvested other species or targeted them as nuisances. The 1973 measure made it illegal to harass, harm, pursue, hunt, shoot, wound, kill, trap, capture, or collect listed animals and plants or ruin their habitats. It ordered federal agencies not to authorize or fund actions likely to jeopardize their existence, although amendments later allowed permits for limited take incidental killing resulting from otherwise legal projects. The act cleared Congress with what in hindsight appears stunning ease, unanimous Senate approval, and a 390-12 House vote. President Richard Nixon, a Republican, signed it into law. It was not created by a bunch of hippies, said Rebecca Hardin, a University of Michigan environmental anthropologist. We had a sense as a country that we had done damage and we needed to heal. But backlash emerged as the statute spurred regulation of oil and gas development, logging, ranching, and other industries. The endangered list grew to include little-known creatures, from the frosted flatwoods salamander to the tooth cave spider, and nearly 1,000 plants. It's easy to get everybody to sign on with protecting whales and grizzly bears, Derima said, but people didn't anticipate that things they wouldn't notice or wouldn't think beautiful would need protection in ways that would block some economic activity. The Northern Spotted Owl's listing as threatened in 1990 sparked years of feuding between conservationists and the timber industry over management of Pacific Northwest forest land. The Trump administration ended blanket protection for animals newly deemed threatened. It let federal authorities consider economic costs of protecting species and disregard habitat impacts from climate change. A federal judge blocked some of Trump's moves. The Biden administration repealed or announced plans to rewrite others. But with a couple of Democratic defections, the Senate voted narrowly this spring to undo protections for a rare grouse known as the lesser prairie chicken, as well as the northern long-eared bat. The House did likewise in July. President Joe Biden threatened vetoes. But to wildlife advocates, the votes illustrate the act's vulnerability, if not to repeal, then to sapping its strength through legislative agency or court actions. Elusive middle ground. Federal regulators are caught in a crossfire over how many species the act should protect and for how long, and how to balance that with interest of property owners and industry. Since the law took effect, 64 of roughly 1,780 listed U.S. species have rebounded enough to be removed, while 64 have improved from endangered to threatened. 11 have been declared extinct, a label proposed for 23 others, including the ivory-billed woodpecker. That's a poor showing, said Jonathan Wood, Vice President of Law and Policy with the Property and Environment Research Center, which represents landowners. The act was supposed to function like a hospital emergency room, providing life-saving but short-term treatment, Wood said. Instead, it resembles perpetual hospice care for too many species. But species typically need at least a half century to recover, and most haven't been listed that long, said Noah Greenwald, Endangered Species Director with the Center for Biological Diversity, an environmental group. The Fish and Wildlife Service has more than 300 under consideration. The service is not getting the job done, Greenwald said. Agency officials acknowledge struggling to keep up with listing proposals and strategies for restoring species. The work is complex. Budgets are tight. Petitions and lawsuits abound. Congress provides millions to rescue popular animals such as Pacific salmon and steelhead trout, while many species get a few thousand dollars annually. The Fish and Wildlife Service is using funds from Biden's Inflation Reduction Act to improve strategies for getting species off the list sooner, Director Martha Williams told a House subcommittee in July. It's also seeking accommodation on another thorny issue, providing enough space where imperiled species can feed, shelter, and reproduce. The Act empowers the government to identify critical habitat where economic development can be limited. Many early supporters believed public lands and waters would meet the need, said Doremus, the UC Berkeley professor. But now, about two-thirds of listed species occupy private property. Meeting the rising demand will require more deals with property owners instead of critical habitat designations, which lower property values and breed resentment, said Wood of the landowners group. You can't police your way to cooperation, he said. A photograph is captioned, Alan Curta, an Eastern Michigan University professor, prepares netting to capture bats June 21 in Sharon Township, Michigan, hoping to find increasingly scarce Indiana and northern long-eared bats. The Senate voted in May to nullify the northern long-eared bat's recent Endangered Species Act designation, which Curta called an ominous sign. The following are captions of photos of animals. A northern spotted owl sits on a branch in June 1995 in Point Reyes, California. The owl's listing as threatened in 1990 sparked years of conflict between conservationists and the Pacific Northwest timber industry. A bald eagle flies December 21 over a partially frozen Des Moines River in Des Moines, Iowa. The species was once an iconic symbol of the Endangered Species Act. It was delisted in 2007 after its population recovered. A gray wolf is pictured July 16, 2004, at the Wildlife Science Center in Forest Lake, Minnesota. A California condor named Hope takes flight May 2 at the Los Angeles Zoo. In the 1970s, biologists found that only a few dozen condors remained in the wild. And lastly, a grizzly bear roams July 6, 2011, near Beaver Lake in Yellowstone National Park, Wyoming. That concludes the Richmond Times-Dispatch Tuesday, August 15th, 2023 news article, Endangered Species Act, 50 Years, Fighting to Stop Extinctions, Embattled Federal Law Protecting Wildlife May Now Find Itself in Peril, by John Flesher with the Associated Press. Now, some AP science news. Billionaires rocketing into space draw UN chiefs' red glare, by Seth Borenstein. Space. We have an equity problem. When 3 billion billionaires rocketed into space this summer, they did more than escape Earth's surly bonds. They helped spread a malady of mistrust, plaguing an all-too-hungry world, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres told other world leaders Tuesday. In his opening speech to the General Assembly, a grim Guterres highlighted the gap between the rich and poor, with billionaires joyriding to space while millions go hungry on Earth. In July, billionaires Richard Branson and Jeff Bezos flew into space on private rockets that their companies built, gathering worldwide attention in their short trips that didn't make it into orbit. Both bank on space tourism business from their fellow space fans with big wallets. After returning to Earth, Branson, 71, sprayed GH Mum champagne over his crew and then chugged it from the bottle. Billionaire Jared Isaacman led the first all-private orbital mission that splashed down Saturday after 3 days in orbit. His flight was on a Dragon capsule and SpaceX rocket built by a fourth space-obsessed billionaire, Elon Musk. Unlike the other two missions, Isaacman's ride raised more than $200 million for St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital, a including $100 million from Isaacman and $50 million from Musk. Guterres lumped billionaire space hops with the maladies of hopelessness, corruption, curtailing of personal freedoms, and when parents see a future for their children that looks even bleaker than the struggles of today. After Branson and Bezos' space flights and revelations that Bezos, the richest man in the world, didn't pay any federal income tax in 2007 and 2011, critics called for taxing billionaires, with some wanting to tax them out of the 10-digit income level. So far, those proposals, unlike the billionaires, haven't gotten off the ground. And that was written by Seth Borenstein in September of 2021. Stem cells from one eye show promise in healing injuries in the other, by Laura Unger, August 18, 2023. Phil Durst recalled clawing at his face after a chemical from a commercial dishwashing machine squirted into his eyes, causing the most indescribable pain I've ever felt, ever. His left eye bore the brunt of the 2017 work accident, which stole his vision, left him unable to tolerate light, and triggered 4 to 5 cluster headaches a day. Then he underwent an experimental procedure that aims to treat severe injuries in one eye with stem cells from the other. I went from completely blind with debilitating headaches and pondering if I could go another day, like really thinking I can't do this anymore, to seeing well enough to drive and emerging from dark places literally and figuratively, he said, choking up. The 51-year-old from Homewood, Alabama, was one of 4 patients to get stem cell transplants as part of the first U.S. study to test the technique, which could someday help thousands. Though additional treatment is sometimes needed, experts say the stem cell transplant offers hope to people with few, if any, other options. Results of the early-stage research were published Friday in the journal Science Advances, and a larger study is now underway. The procedure is designed to treat limbal stem cell deficiency, a corneal disorder that can occur after chemical burns and other eye injuries. Patients without limbal cells, which are essential for replenishing and maintaining the cornea's outermost layer, can't undergo corneal transplants that are commonly used to improve vision. Dr. Ula Jurkunas, an ophthalmologist at Mass Eye and Ear in Boston, who was the principal investigator for the study, said the experimental technique involves taking a small biopsy of stem cells from the healthy eye, then expanding and growing them on a graft in a lab at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston. A couple of weeks later, they're sent back to be transplanted into the injured eye. Durst was the first patient to undergo the procedure. The great part of it is that we're using a patient's own tissue, not donor tissue the body might reject, Jurkunas said. She said this method is better than a different procedure that takes a very large piece of stem cells from a healthy eye for use on an injured eye, but risks damaging the good eye. Both of Durst's eyes were hurt in the accident, which happened while the former chemical company manager was visiting a client having problems with the dishwashing machine. For 6 to 8 months, his overall vision was so bad his wife or son had to lead him around. But his right eye was less injured than his left and could provide stem cells for the transplant. Jurkunas, who is also affiliated with Harvard Medical School, said Durst's 2018 surgery was the culmination of almost 2 decades of research, so we felt immense happiness and excitement to finally do it. All patients in the study saw their cornea surfaces restored. Durst and another patient were then able to get transplants of artificial corneas, while 2 others reported much improved vision with the stem cell transplant alone. A 5th patient didn't get the procedure because the stem cells weren't able to adequately expand. At this point, Durst said the vision in his right eye is nearly perfect, but the vision in his left eye is blurry. He's scheduled for a different procedure in September to address that. Dracunas estimates about 1,000 people in the U.S. per year could potentially benefit from this sort of stem cell transplant, which has also been studied in Japan. There's definitely an unmet clinical need for this effort. There's no question, said Dr. Twin Shin, an ophthalmology professor at the University of Washington who was not involved in the research. She added that doctors currently have no reliable source of cultivated limbal stem cells. Researchers are finalizing the next phase of the clinical trial, which includes 15 patients. One is Nick Carufe, whose left eye was injured in 2020. He was watching fireworks being set off in the street when a spark hit his eyeball. Carufe moved from California to Boston to take part in the study, and the 26-year-old real estate agent can see well enough to fly a small plane. Though he's given up on plans of becoming a commercial pilot, I still fly whenever I get back to California. I love it, he said. I'm just really thankful that they gave me the opportunity to be part of the trial because it's really helped me out. Water quality concerns halt Paris Olympic swimming test in the Seine. August 19, 2023, Paris. Another Paris Olympics test run in the Seine River was canceled on Saturday because of concerns about water quality in a fresh blow to games organizers and the city's ambitions to reopen the iconic river to public swimming. Triathlon swimmers took to the Seine in competition on Thursday and Friday, but results of water quality tests showed significant discrepancies in the hours leading up to Saturday's scheduled paratriathlon events, organizers said in a statement. The competition was transformed into a duathlon of just running and biking. Water safety officials are trying to determine why two testing systems used for the river produced different results. One indicated too high levels of bacteria overnight, said Pierre-Antoine Molina, who oversees public policy for the Paris Regional Administration. Rainfall in recent days may have had a factor. A previous test event had to be canceled this month because heavy rain caused overflows of untreated waste in the Seine, leaving water quality below safety standards. Rainfall also hit Paris ahead of Saturday's cancellation. Paris is spending massively on water management projects that officials say will make pollution caused by storms less frequent. Olympics organizers remain undeterred in their mission to hold open-air swimming events along the picturesque river, viewing this month's cancellations as a learning experience. The head of the Paris 2024 Organizing Committee, Tony Estanguet, said a contingency plan will be in place next year to allow swimming events to be postponed for a few days if water quality isn't up to standard. But there's no plan B for moving the competition. We will remain in this extraordinary location no matter what happens, said Estanguet, a three-time Olympic gold medalist in canoe slalom. We want to preserve this ambition. The plan for Olympic and Paralympic athletes to swim in the Seine dovetails with City Hall's efforts to clean up the long, murky waterway. Paris has promised more transparency about its cleanup efforts than Rio de Janeiro, where concerns about sewage-contaminated water dogged the 2016 Olympics. This week's triathlon takes athletes and spectators watching for free to some of the French capital's most striking vistas. The swim starts from the bottom of the 19th century Alexandra III Bridge and its golden statues. The bike and run laps go along the Champs-Élysées and through some prestigious neighborhoods. New tests will be conducted and a decision will be made early Sunday on whether Sunday's swimming events can be held as scheduled, organizers said. Off Alaska coast, research crew peers down to map deep and remote ocean. by Joshua A. Bickle, August 14, 2023, Kodiak, Alaska. For the team aboard the Okeanos Explorer off the coast of Alaska, exploring the mounds and craters of the sea floor along the Aleutian Islands is a chance to surface new knowledge about life in some of the world's deepest and most remote waters. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration research vessel is on a 5-month mission aboard a reconfigured former Navy vessel run by civilians and members of the NOAA Corps. The ship, with a 48-member crew, is outfitted with technology and tools to peer deep into the ocean to gather data to share with onshore researchers in real time. The hope is that this data will then be used to drive future research. It's so exciting to go down there and see that it's actually teeming with life, said Expedition Coordinator Shannon Hoy. You would never know that unless we were able to go down there and explore. Using a variety of sonars and 2 remotely operated vehicles, Deep Discoverer and Sirios, researchers aboard the ship are mapping and collecting samples from areas along the Aleutian Trench and Gulf of Alaska. High-resolution cameras that can operate at depths up to 6,000 meters, 19,685 feet, allow researchers to document and immediately share their findings. The ship can also live stream dives to the public. Many factors, such as depth, speed, and sonar capability, influence how much seafloor can be mapped. In 2 to 4 weeks, the Okeanos Explorer can map as much as 50,000 square kilometers, 31,069 square miles, Hoy said. During these dives, Hoy said the team plans to investigate some of the area's cold seep communities, places where gases from under the seafloor rise through cracks and where plants don't rely on photosynthesis for food production. We're also going to be looking through the water column to see what interesting animals and fauna that we can see there. Casey Cantwell, the ship's operations chief, said the data will help researchers and the public better understand these remote stretches of ocean, including marine life and habitats in the area. That could inform management decisions and fisheries. Data could also help detect hazards and improve nautical charts. It's really hard to care for things you don't understand, to love things you don't understand, Cantwell said. The deep ocean off Alaska's Aleutian Islands is one of the least mapped places in the U.S., partly due to its remoteness. Modern mapping standards have covered just 34% of the sea floor around Alaska, which has one of the nation's largest coastal ecosystems, and only a fraction of that has been seen, according to the expedition's website. Closing these gaps is a mission priority and will help meet a goal of mapping all of the United States deep waters by 2030 and near shore waters by 2040, according to Emily Crum, a communications specialist with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. But the data collection process is laborious. Thomas Morrow, a physical scientist on the ship, likened the effort to walking the length of several city blocks in complete darkness with a tiny flashlight. Nevertheless, all these small looks add up to a better understanding of what lies in the deepest parts of the sea. In the expedition's first 2 months, researchers recorded methane seeps and saw a Brisingid sea star at a depth of 2,803 meters, 9,200 feet, that had not been documented in the Aleutians before. At least 2 potential new species have also been discovered. Earlier this year, while on an expedition off the coast of Washington State, researchers aboard the ship documented a jellyfish floating in the deep, and soon had a call from an excited scientist who told them the jellyfish was behaving in ways not seen before. The feeling of wonder that sometimes happens in that control room is so palpable, he said. That concludes the Insight and In Science program, which this week read from Richmond Times-Dispatch News and AP Science News. Thank you for listening.